Gentlemen, start your engine!
This is the IBJ podcast for the week of June 15th, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Leslie Weidenbender, managing editor of IBJ, and this week I'm in for Mason King. If you're a resident of central Indiana, those sounds need no introduction. But in case you aren't, the first clip is Tony Holman, the longtime owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, talking to drivers in 1977. Of course, the Holman family sold the Speedway last fall to racing giant Roger Penske, who's been fixing up the iconic track in preparation for the 2020 Indianapolis 500, which was to take place, as it always does, over Memorial Day weekend. The coronavirus derailed those plans, and now the race is scheduled for August. Will it take place with fans? That's our discussion for today. I talked with IBJ reporter Anthony Shutley about the race and about his conversation with IMS President Doug Bowles about the organization's determination to run the race with fans in the stands. Here's our conversation. Anthony, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So Anthony, tell us when the Indianapolis 500 is now scheduled to run.
So as everybody in the known universe knows, that the Indianapolis 500 was not held on Memorial Day weekend, as it has been for 100 years. And it's was moved to August 23rd to give, you know, obviously the coronavirus situation the time to clear up and all the medical pieces to get put in place. And they're confident they can have it August 23rd.
I think at the time when it was postponed, there was quite a bit of confidence that by August things would be cleared up or that we would have a better solution. Do you think that it's surprising that we're still talking about the fact that having it is risky?
It's surprising that there would be such confidence, in my opinion, with everything we know about the coronavirus and how highly, highly contagious it is, that there would be that kind of confidence. I've never understood what people thought was going to change. The disease is not going to get eradicated until we get a vaccine. And so we're going to be dealing with this, you know, for a while. But I think they were waiting for the curve to go down, and which it has, or flattened, I guess, and all the medical infrastructure to get in place to deal with any kind of influxes that we might have. I asked Doug Bowles, the president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, what kind of crowd he expected. And Doug said, and he's very confident, that they could get more than 200,000 people in that venue. You know, they're banking on the fact that it's a large venue. It's an open air venue, so it's very different than going to a game in Lucas Oil Stadium or Bankers Life Fieldhouse. You know, but nevertheless, if you've been inside the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and you sat in the grandstands, they are grandstands. They're bleachers. They're not seats. So even a relatively, you know, two small people are sitting kind of shoulder to shoulder. And also you're sitting in fairly close proximity from the row behind you and the row in front of you. So, I mean, I still think there's some very big challenges, but you know, that is a very critical piece. The Indianapolis 500 is a very critical piece to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the IndyCar Series financially.
We should really go back and talk about the Indianapolis 500. And first of all, remind us, the ownership of Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Indy Racing League recently changed. So catch us up on what's happening there.
So not to be too flip about it, but the Holman George family must be breathing. You wouldn't breathe a sigh of relief about the coronavirus, right? But you know, the Holman George family had owned this structure, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, for decades and decades, and they sold it to Roger Penske last offseason. Roger Penske, for those that don't know, is the winningest race car owner in the history of the Indianapolis 500. He also has a very successful and large team in NASCAR. Roger Penske has an enormous business enterprise, car dealerships, transportation companies, on and on and on. So he's making lots of money outside of the sphere of auto racing. And I think auto racing might make him some money, but it's more a passion than it is, you know, a for-profit enterprise. So Roger, who has loads of money and lots of good ideas, purchased the track and the IndyCar Series last off-season, and he has been renovating, from what I understand, like crazy. If you've ever been to the Motor Speedway and been inside the bathrooms, you know, praise the Lord, he's upgraded the bathrooms, and that's just the start of it. I'm being a little facetious. He's paved parking lots. He's put up new buildings and you know, spiffed everything up, and he's still doing that. So, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of disappointment that he's wanting to roll out the red carpets on all the work that he has done since you know, buying this thing a few months ago, and now he's having to deal with this coronavirus situation.
And the Indianapolis 500 is just one race in the Indy racing series, but why is it so important?
Let's go back a little bit. You know, the Indianapolis 500 has always been by far the biggest open wheel automobile race in the world, and certainly in the IndyCar series, even before it was known. You know, it was the Indy Racing League before that, and then it was part of the larger open wheel circus known as a Champ Car and all of that. It's always been the engine that's made open wheel racing go in the United States. It's always been the biggest driver of sponsorship dollars. And it's an enormous revenue generator in terms of ticket revenue and sponsorship and TV money, not only for the teams, but also for the entire series and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway itself, obviously. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway has other events, but they pale in comparison compared to the Indianapolis 500. And it could be argued very easily. It could be argued that without the Indianapolis 500, the IndyCar series would be out of business.
And how important is this race to the city of Indianapolis and the town of Speedway and the whole central Indiana economy?
So to be clear, the Indianapolis 500 was a bigger, more global event in the mid-90s and early 2000s, and somewhat in the 80s as well. But as NASCAR has gotten bigger, as Formula One has gotten more popular in North America, the Indianapolis 500 isn't quite the global draw that it used to be. But it's still, you know, it's still drawing 4 to 6 million people watching on television every year. It is most certainly a draw from all the contiguous states. And there are some people who come from nationwide, not maybe as many as they used to. So, you know, it's a big, what I would consider three-night type event. Now, I say three nights because I covered tourism for years. And convention people and hotel people and tourism people always talk in terms of hotel room nights. So it's not going to be like a Super Bowl that's going to bring people in for 5 or 6 nights. It's going to be an event over the Memorial Day weekend that brings people in for 2 to 3 nights. The Fast Friday event and the qualifications aren't nearly as big as they used to be, but those events are still big. They still draw people in. And, you know, the hotel rooms here in the city are mostly full for 2 nights. So it's a big event, and it has an economic impact in the hundreds of millions. It's not quite where a Super Bowl would be. It's on par with a Final Four. And it's big. It's every year. And, you know, it's an important element to this city's sportscape. I mean, it's really the first crown jewel of the city's sportscape. I mean, of all the things that we have now, it's easy to forget that the Indianapolis 500 is huge. It's been huge a long time, and it predates all of that other stuff that we do now, sports-wise.
How disappointing do you think it was for the hospitality industry that the Indianapolis 500 had to be postponed to begin with?
It was an enormous blow to the hospitality industry. And unfortunately, it was one of about 24 enormous blows that the hospitality industry has been dealing with over the course of 3 months. I mean, they have been hit straight in the mouth, left, right, and center. You know, we're talking about enormous events and conferences, Gen Con, and all of these other things that have vacated. I mean, if you look at the percentage of rooms in our hotel rooms have been full on some weeks, you know, in the middle of this, in the height of the coronavirus pandemic, occupancy has been around 5% in the city, 5%. Normally it trends at 45 to 65%, and of course the Indianapolis 500 was probably the arrow shot straight through the heart. I mean, it's an enormous event, like I said, that fills every hotel room in the city for 2 or 3 nights, and then you have a lot of people coming in from surrounding areas just for the day, whether it's Bloomington, Fort Wayne, Muncie, Evansville, you know, who are buying gasoline here and who are buying other products and eating at restaurants and on and on and on. So it's not overstating things to say that the city has lost tens of millions of dollars over the Memorial Day weekend. Now, maybe they recoup some of that in August, or the Speedway is saying if they can't hold it with fans in August, they'll move it to October. But I don't think you're going to recoup all of it. And if you look at the most recent Gallup poll, you know, there's still close to half of all people and sports fans who are saying they're still uncomfortable going to a mass sporting event. There's no bigger mass sporting event than Indianapolis 500, people. You know, on an average year, it'd be 250,000 people. You know, this year, Doug Bowles, the president of Speedway, is saying it's they're hopeful it's going to be over 200,000 people. So if half of all people, or, you know, it was much higher. You know, if you looked at the Gallup poll 6 weeks ago, it was as high as 80% of people who were saying they were uncomfortable going to a mass sporting event. So you got to believe that some of the people that would normally go to the race are not going to go to the race, either because they were planning on going to Memorial Day, now it's in August, or they're afraid of the coronavirus situation or whatever.
The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I think, believed that they were going to be able to hold their NASCAR race over Independence Day weekend with fans. That race was scheduled for after the time that Governor Eric Holcomb said he wanted to have things reopened. The city is a little further behind than that, but were you surprised that IMS decided that they could not hold the NASCAR race with fans?
I'm not surprised in so much as I think that there are still some, you know, pretty serious safety concerns. And not only that, you know, I don't want to downplay the Brickyard 400 and all that goes with that. It's just not nearly as big. I mean, not nearly as big or financially profitable as the Indianapolis 500. So there's less to lose there in canceling the event. And I think NASCAR has a more difficult schedule. They have many more races, and because of the coronavirus, the schedule is much more compacted. So you can't just willy-nilly move a race from here to there. And NASCAR very much wanted to have a race over the July 4 weekend. Now, the TV rights is no small piece of this puzzle. And the TV rights is just about all that NASCAR has to hang its hat on right now, because they're not getting ticket revenue because they're not having any fans in the stands to this point. The TV audience for a NASCAR race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway over the July 4th weekend with no other sports essentially happening right now. You know, basketball has not resumed. Baseball is still working out their situation. NFL football doesn't play in July. We're not even having team workouts. We can't even follow that. I wouldn't be surprised if we had a record TV audience for the July 4th race. And that is something. That's not nothing. That's something. That's something very good for NASCAR and for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And it's a little bit of coin that they can all share. So, you know, I think there's a lot of incentive to have that NASCAR race on the July 4th weekend, even without fans. Now, when you start talking about the fan element for the Indianapolis 500, that's a different kettle of fish. The IndyCar series and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, they can't buttress themselves with respect to the TV money in the same way that NASCAR can. That's a little more difficult to explain. I'm not going to go into all of that. But that ticket revenue is a bigger slice of the pie for the IndyCar series and in particularly the Indianapolis Motor Speedway than it could be for the Brickyard 400. So they need those fans. I understand why the IndyCar series and Indianapolis Motor Speedway are holding fast to that idea of having that fans in the stands, because they need that ticket revenue and that merchandise revenue. You know, all that, you know, all those fans through the turnstile, they buy a lot more than just tickets. You know, you've got concessions and merchandise and all of these things. So it's a big deal not to have fans in the stands for the 500.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast. The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm talking with IBJ reporter Anthony Shutley about the Indianapolis 500.
Roger Penske told Racer magazine that he wouldn't hold the race without fans. It was all a little bit confusing at the time, but as you mentioned, you talked to Doug Bowles about it. Clarify for us what Roger Penske meant and what the Speedway plans to do.
I'll be honest with you. I'm really not 100% certain, even after talking to Doug Bowles. I'm just being honest here. I know where Roger Penske, the showman, was coming from, but I don't know where Roger Penske, the businessman, is coming from. I empathize with his need to have fans in the stands. But the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Roger Penske and Doug Bowles et al. Are fixed and focused on having fans in the stands. And they have decided, from a strategic standpoint, to focus on getting themselves ready to meet and greet fans and make plans to have fans in the stands, which is going to be no small planning operation, right? They're going to hand out masks to everybody who comes through the turnstile. They don't think they're going to require fans to wear masks, but that has yet to be determined. They don't think they're going to, though. They're going to hand out sanitizer to everybody who comes through the turnstile. These sound like simple things, but when you're talking about 220 or 30,000 people coming through the turnstile, it's a major logistical issue. Now, what about all the thousands of people who work at this track? What about all the yellow shirts that, you know, meet and greet and directional people? What about all the other people, from cleaning people to merchandise and concession people? You know, how are you going to keep them safe? So that's where they want to focus, rather than trying to think about 24 different contingency plans for what if we let 20,000 people in, or 50,000, or 100,000, or what if we have none, or what do we do if this is the case, if that's the case? They've decided to focus all of their energy and focus on dealing with fans in the stands. And they've got a date in August, August 23rd, as we said. They have a contingency date, if they don't feel like they can go forward safely there, to move this thing into October. But they are hell-bent, and they won't even talk about no fans in the stands. They won't even talk about that possibility right now. And I get it.
What do you think the chances are, and maybe this is not a fair question, but what do you think the chances are that it will go off on August 23rd with fans in the stands?
They got a puncher's chance. They got a puncher's chance. Indiana is seeing the curve flattening. Indianapolis is seeing the curve flattening. So it does look like, if everything goes to plan, that they will be in phase five. That would be, you know, the phase where mass sporting events are allowed. You know, I would say that probably, you know, getting in and out of the facility is, you're going to have the most exposure. You can probably keep yourself pretty safe once you get in and out of the facility. But I don't know if you all have ever been to the Indianapolis 500 on race day. I mean, it's a mosh pit trying to get in that facility. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. That is just the logistical reality of getting 200 plus thousand people through, you know, a limited number of gates. It's an open air facility. I'd have to think about it a little bit, but I might feel safer at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway than I would be with 18,000 people at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I asked Doug Bowles if he thought some people would be afraid to go in. And he said to me, some people might be fearful, I'm paraphrasing here, just as some people are fearful of going to the grocery store. Well, that's a little bit of an unfair comparison. I mean, I don't go to the grocery store with 200,000 people, but I understand. And they want to throw the welcome mat out and let the fans decide for themselves what's safe and what's not. But as an event organizer, I think, you know, the Indianapolis 500, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway officials, you know, they need to exercise some caution. I mean, an event organizer can't set up a dangerous situation. A lot of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway's fans, a lot of the Indianapolis 500's fans are longtime fans. They're in their 60s and 70s, let's be honest. Some of them are younger, but the Speedway people are going to let those people decide for themselves whether it's safe. But I think you're almost kind of putting a tempting situation out there for people who might not be wise for them to go.
You've noted that while in some states that have been reopening, there has been a big increase in coronavirus cases, we haven't actually seen that so far in Indiana. And our hospitalizations are down. There are plenty of ICU beds. There are plenty of ventilators available right now, which are the metrics that the state seems to be most focused on as they make decisions about reopening. And in fact, Governor Eric Holcomb just sped up the reopening a little bit. But things can change quickly. And so it'll be interesting to see what actually happens in the next few weeks.
Yes, it most certainly will. I mean, maybe I'm a little overly cautious. If you listen to the medical experts, we're probably going to have a vaccine by the beginning of next year. And so, you know, I'm not sure why the rush into potentially dangerous situations when a vaccine is around the corner. And there's still a lot we don't know about this disease. And it's easy to sit here and say that, think that it's probably not going to happen to us and, you know, we're young. But the fact is, we don't know, unless you've already had the coronavirus, you really don't know how your body's going to respond to it. People are being impacted on a very individual basis. I hope they're able to have it. I mean, I think everybody in Indianapolis with a heart hopes that they can have it and hopes the best for the Speedway. It's an awesome asset for the city. And the race is an awesome, awesome spectacle to behold. But I also hope that they don't push the envelope like an overeager racer going into the wall on this thing. I hope that people too heed what Doug Bowles said. You have to decide for yourself. Just because they have the race doesn't mean you have to go. I mean, I personally think they should lift the blackout. I'd love to see the Indianapolis Motor Speedway lift the blackout for Indiana residents, central Indiana residents.
So that's a good question, Anthony. I didn't even ask you about that. Will they allow local TV to air the race so those people who decide they don't want to risk it can see it?
My understanding is that they are not considering doing that right now. Now, I think that could change. This is Roger Penske's first go-around. I think the Holman George were very hardcore and not lifting the blackout. And I explained earlier, it's become a more local and regional event than national event. So there's lots of reasons not to lift the blackout from a business perspective. And maybe they wouldn't gain as enough on the business side lifting the blackout than they would lose in ticket revenue. And the Indianapolis Motor Speedway told me, Doug Bowles told me, that at this point that they're not going to be offering any sort of refunds or credits on those tickets. Do you go ahead and use them? You try to sell them? Even if you think it's an unsafe situation? Here, I don't want to go. Here, you have them. I'll sell them to you. That's a weird situation too. So people will have to decide for themselves.
Anthony, thank you so much for all of your wisdom.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Anthony. If you are planning to go to the race, regardless of the coronavirus, or if you plan to stay home, drop us an email at ibjedit@ibj.com to tell us why. You can read Anthony's interview with Doug Bowles in this week's issue of IBJ, where you will also find an interesting column by editor Greg Andrews about the way some of the nation's biggest retailers are playing hardball with landlords as they try to renegotiate their leases. Also in this week's issue, reporter Lindsay Erdody details how the state plans to spend at least part of the $2.6 billion it received in federal pandemic relief money. And reporter Kirk Christian explains how the shutdown has affected car dealerships, which are still making sales but running out of vehicles. Thanks for tuning in to the IBJ podcast, which you can find every Monday morning at ibj.com or wherever you find podcasts. Mason will be back next week. Thank you.